I'm Heidi Holton. Coming up, you'll get a chance to hear more of the live discussion we had for Dig Deep with Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator, and Chuck Marone, our conservative. They continue this idea on national versus rural in terms of media, in terms of a lot of things. Here's Chuck.
Let me try to answer Aaron's question and kind of tie what you just said into that. Because your question was, like, what's not working here for rural America, for small towns? And I think there's one big thing that we've addressed that you, Heidi, kind of just touched on, and that is the economic policy. When we look at our economic policy nationally, it is based around a model of growth and efficiency. When we look at state level policy, it's based around a model of growth and efficiency. When we get down to the local level, when we look at a model of growth and efficiency, it is a very destructive force here, particularly in rural America. A model of growth and efficiency looks at a development that replaces the entire downtown with a strip mall with Starbucks and Pizza Hut and Target out on the edge of town as like a more efficient model, because now we can source materials from different places and drive down prices, and there are all these things that happen. That from a macro standpoint, from a DC standpoint, or from a St. Paul standpoint, look really, really good to statisticians, people who sit and pore over spreadsheets on how the economy is doing. And if you're at the Federal Reserve and you're, you know, fretting over what interest rates should be or whether you should, you know, extend this bond out or do that, these numbers are comforting to you when you can, you know, increase the efficiency and the operating capacity of the economy. So all kinds of economic theories that show this makes sense. But when we get to the local level and we understand like what this means for us as people, it changes things dramatically. When we don't have the person owning the coffee shop here locally, who not only is selling coffee, but is building equity in a building and a business, creating wealth for themselves that they can pass on to someone else. When the person who owns our coffee shop is literally like a conglomerate investment from outside the community where the profits leave and they don't get circulated around and they don't, you know, sponsor a local softball team and put a float in the 4th of July parade and volunteer on the PTA because that's what a local businessman does. When you lose that thing, there's a lot that we lose as a local economic ecosystem. And I think as long as we continue with economic policy, and we can get into different aspects of policy, but I think we can start there. As long as we stick with this model we have now, we may be able to gin up certain macro statistics that make people at the Fed and the U.S. Treasury really happy. But we're going to struggle here to have those policies pay off for us in a way that is going to make us strong and stable and healthy economically and provide that kind of opportunities that people here want.
You can call in and add to this conversation or pose a question, 800-662-5799. That's Chuck Marone along with Aaron Brown. The question you posed to listeners, Aaron, again?
Well, what issue is, or what issue is affecting you that the national discussion of that issue isn't really on topic for, right, for what's really affecting you? And I think the other thing is the notion of the people of our community and understanding that there are a lot of people who don't necessarily have a voice, who aren't necessarily at all the meetings and online tweeting and Facebooking on the local news sites. And there's a whole lot of other people who I think you might know them from walking down the street and talking to them. I'm always, whenever there's a county fair or something, I'm always amazed. Like, you go there and you're like, wow, there's all these people. And I know that they're not a part of the decision-making for this community or this area. And, you know, in a local area, we have the ability to talk to more people, so why don't we? And so, I you know, that's something that's on my mind often when I write about these things.
It's interesting because you said something that just struck me about being represented. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's a sense here that our voice is not being heard. And the things that are important to us are not being heard. Let me give you a counter to that, though, that I find very fascinating. I spent some time recently in California, and I'll tell you what Californians say. we're not being heard. Our voice is not being heard. We're not being represented. And I'm like, how can you say that? You're the biggest state. Everything that you do here winds up, you know, getting adopted other places. You have the largest amount of representation in the U.S. Congress. And they're like, yeah, but your state, Minnesota, or we go to Wyoming or the Dakotas, you've got two senators just like we do. And so, you know, you're way overrepresented. And and right now the Senate is holding up all these things that we want to see happen. And you're support, you know, you're appointing all the judges that are doing all these things. And so I think it's very interesting in the system that we've created that people in one huge populous state that in my mind, like dominates our media and our culture and like dominates everything. They feel like they're not represented. They feel like we're overrepresented and that our interests are like, you know, taking center stage. And I sit here and I'm like, that's absurd. Like we're not listened to at all. Our thoughts are not represented in any way. And I wonder if that's a reflection, not necessarily that one or the other is wrong, but maybe both are right.
That we talk about nuance among people, but there's also nuance among systems. Now, I hope this isn't too nerdy for the live show.
Oh, let's go nerdy.
There's a poor understanding, and I'm not just saying it's not just education, but it's very complex, which is why there's a poor understanding of the relationship between our elected government in the various parts of it, which include a local elected government, state and federal elected governments, and the business community, the economy, and to the degree to which small businesses and very large businesses control economic patterns, and then, you know, nonprofits and groups and actual people living in communities and what they can do and what their consumer power is, what their people power is, what, you know, what their economic power as workers are, collective bargaining could be included in that. All of these different systems affect the day-to-day lives of people like us. But it's not as easy, you know, you mentioned California's attitude about the U.S. Senate. That's one thing out of many. We talk about not being heard at St. Paul or not being heard in Washington, D.C., and I think that's arguably, you know, the dominant reason why you've seen a conservative tilt in the more recent elections in this area. The people don't feel that the centralized federal government, for instance, which is seen as a, you know, a liberal concept, is hearing us. So if that's the case, what are we really talking about? Because we're not talking about the U.S. Senate. That's not really our beef. And but we do feel that whether it's, you know, policy, regulations, or whether it's just I think it's sometimes as simple as the cultural attention paid to. I didn't even mention culture because that's a huge part of what's going on. We are in just a very multicultural country that is so geographically large that the different cultures, it's not like we're all sitting in a room together. You know, California, you've been there. I was there once and we talk about it. It can be a foreign concept to somebody living in Nisswa, you know, California crazies, you know, never mind that there's tremendous, like Sacramento versus San Francisco versus East LA.
They're talking about splitting up into five states because they can't stand each other.
And they could be five states, and they could be five very different states. And so, you know, but we don't have an understanding of what life is really like there, just like they don't understand Northern Minnesota. But the flip side of that is there's such a power, like you mentioned, the power imbalance just because of numbers. And because in the culture, you know, our culture is driven by the coasts. We've had discussions about this. And it's really hard even for smart people to represent something they don't understand. It'd be like me trying to write a comedy about life in San Francisco, you know. Right. I was there once. I can do some Google searches and watch some Full House episodes. Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, and try to game my way through it, you know, but it wouldn't be as authentic as the voice from that place writing about it. And I think there's a lot of, like, you watch popular media, and I don't just mean political media, but like movies, you know, and its understanding of life in rural places. I was just thinking about this the other day, and I know if we have a boomer audience, this could be the red meat that gets this conversation going. But the Hair, are you familiar with Hair, the musical? There was a movie version of this, and now I'm billed as the liberal side of this equation, so this will be perhaps contrary to the expectation of what a liberal might say about the movie Hair. Watching this movie, the only person in the whole movie that I identified with on a visceral level was in the first minute of the movie when the old guy driving the truck brings his son to the bus stop. And the only guy in that whole movie that I felt like I could tolerate would be the dad driving the truck, because he said something nice to his son. You know, good luck. You know, don't forget who you are, where you're from. And then the rest of the movie happens. I can take or leave the rest of the movie, but the only guy there who I really want to know is that dad. And he's totally insignificant. In fact, the theme of the movie is that everything he thought is dumb, you know. So I totally get that, why people would see the media presentation of this area or this part of the country as being kind of insignificant, old-fashioned, archaic, to be left behind. And we look at our communities and our people and we say, you know what, there's people doing art, there's people doing music, there's people starting businesses. And yeah, it's not as productive, like it's not as efficient and growth-oriented, like Chuck said, as a thriving suburb or a thriving urban area. And so we can then tell ourselves that we're not as good as those places. But that's a heck of a thing to live with. And I think it starts to do things to your head collectively, to our heads, about what this place is about. And so I think it's good. I don't mean this in a nationalistic, like we need to rise up and, you know, reclaim what is ours. I mean, just we need to just acknowledge that we have value, and we have value as communities, and that it doesn't have to be like this, and we don't have to get the magical combination of our side in the political argument, Democrats or Republicans, winning all the elections, winning all the legislative contests, winning all the U.S. Senate and Congress and representative contests, winning the presidency, appointing 5 out of 9 Supreme Court justices to complete the bingo, which I think is how a lot of people think about politics. We've got to get the bingo, you know,
right.
All red, all blue, and then we win. And of course, it never happens that way for long.
And when it does, it doesn't work.
So. And when it does, it typically there are other things and you know, various obstruction measures and then people's just nobody is happy, you know, even when they win, people aren't happy.
So let me ask you this: Do we have this existential crisis? Do we have this problem if we have? Still have robust local newspapers and local conversations. Mm-hmm. We still have a downtown where people congregate, not because there's a special event, but just because that's where they work and that's where their businesses mm-hmm. are, and they run into other people. Do we still have this kind of existential identity crisis if when I open up my Twitter feed, the algorithm feeds me the 100 local people before it feeds me Donald Trump? So I'm actually, you know, not interfacing with the world through this top-down thing, but actually through like the local culture that I live
right
in.
Right now, the problem is the local people are sharing the national stuff.
Sharing Trump, right?
Yeah.
No, I know.
You know. And they're sharing, you know, the
Trump and the derivations on
the most frustrating thing is watching, you know, and so family is complicated, you know, and family, if you're like me and you have family that have divergent political views, you know, there's people who believe anything on the spectrum in my large family, and you see the things that are shared so on social media, and it's like this collection of memes and angry things and all this, you know, nasty stuff, and you can engage with it, but the more you engage with it, the more you see it, so you try not. But then we had a grad party this weekend for one of my cousins. Lovely as can be, family, everybody together, happy, congratulatory for the graduate, catching up. You know, we lost my grandpa a month ago. People are talking and kind of working through the grieving process. And it's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. That's beautiful, but it's not what we get when we go online. And I think it's the same thing on a community level. You know, we don't get the shared pride in a place or the shared pride in a graduating class at the local school or something really nice, the flowers that are planted. And we don't get to share in that because we don't really experience it anymore. You know, we don't see it in our, like you mentioned, the local media. I mean, it's stunning the difference between the papers I'm reading from 100 years ago and the paper I read every morning, you know, the same newspaper with dramatically less local perspective. And arguably, the only argument for a local newspaper is local perspective, and yet that's not really in any of our local papers what you get entirely. You get a lot of either press releases that are fed by organizations that are sometimes they take the time to convert them into a news copy format. But then a lot of national stuff as well, and stuff that gets kind of the old cliches you see on cable news get kind of
right
morphed into some local letter to the editor or something.
So let me go full conservative on you. We do these sometimes and I give the trigger warning. Like I do feel like what we have been through really since, and we can go back to Woodrow Wilson, but I think like the big jumping off point was the New Deal. We have in the name of fighting the Depression, fighting the Nazis, fighting commies, you know, you go through your whole list of enemies that we're fighting. We have continually aggregated and centralized decision-making in this country. We can't do education at the local level because teachers are not doing the right thing. So we need to have a national standardized test. And you know, I'm trying to do an olive branch with that one because I know that that's the one that drives progressive nuts.
Yeah.
But you've got them on both sides, right? Like we're incapable at the local level of doing these things well. And so we must bring it to the state level. We must bring it to the national level. And what happens to me over time is that it's a little bit, and I'll give this analogy, it's a little bit like what happens when you keep tying your kid's shoe. You know, you got a 13-year-old kid that you're tying their shoe. Like, no, at 3 years old, you can tie your own shoe. Like, you as a parent, when you take away the capacity of someone to do something that they can do, they wind up ultimately not doing it. And in a lot of ways, we had a local economy. We had local decision making. We had these things. Were they perfect? No. Did they work well? No, absolutely not. And I think you can make a strong case that there should have been changes, that those changes maybe should have been pushed or advocated for at higher levels of government, at a state level or mm-hmm. at a federal level. But what we have done, instead of saying, look, local government, like this is screwed up, like you got to fix this. Or look, local government, like you can do better. And we all kind of agree that this needs to be better. So let's move this in a different direction. We came in and said, hey, we're going to take this responsibility away from you and we're going to do it somewhere else. I think that the initial response to that was largely, in many cases, positive. We're going to have the Minnesota miracle, and we're going to get rid of local tax structures, and we're just going to have one big, efficient state taxing system. And guess what? It made the state very rich, and they could give money to local governments because they had tons of money when they did that, because it's a really efficient model. But you take it out 40 years, and all of a sudden, the state is broke. The benefactor that we were counting on to pay for our firefighters and our police officers and our schools, they don't have any money now. And so what we gave up was the capacity to run our own future in exchange for this largesse, and the largesse is gone. What did we gain? What did we gain? And I think ultimately what we're going to go through, whether we voluntarily do it or whether we involuntarily do it, is some type of relocalization of many of these things. Incidentally, I don't think that has to be a conservative liberal mm-hmm. split. I think that there's a lot of ways to do very progressive things at the local level. I think there's a lot of ways to do very conservative things at the local level. I think there's a lot of conservatives that love centralization and nationalization of things. I think whether we like it or not, We're going to have a conversation over the next two decades about what we do for ourselves now and how we localize things again and how we make that function. And I think that is the antidote to a lot of these struggles that we have.
I always feel like a lot of the conversation, like you just mentioned, is kind of the effect of what do you have when about half the country thinks you're playing basketball and the other half thinks you're playing lacrosse. And then when given the opportunity to enter the field of play, one side starts playing basketball, the other plays lacrosse. Sometimes when there are more people playing lacrosse, it looks like a lacrosse game. And sometimes when there are more people playing basketball, it looks a little bit like a basketball game. But it's never really one or the other. And I feel like whether you look at the centralization, see, there was, like you mentioned, some of the factors involved were the Depression and World War II, huge, you know, seismic events in our country's history. And it really provoked a centralized response, like you point out, followed by a period where once everything was centralized.
Well, now we have enemies to fight. We have the Soviet Union.
And we emerged emerged from World War II with an enemy that was, yes, it was the Soviet Union, but it was much bigger than that. It was in fact an idea. Well, when your enemy is an idea, you're never going to be not fighting it.
Terrorism?
Exactly. Terrorism being right. the more modern example. There will always be terrorism, just like there might always be socialism or some form of it. And if you want to fight it forever, then you certainly can. We're trying.
We are trying.
You know, we're trying at the expense of about half of our federal budget going toward some form of defense and global reach, you know. And as the mechanic might say, there was your problem. The problem with centralizations is you can kind of say, well, is it the centralized military you got a problem with? Is it the centralized economic system that we put together that is now kind of a quasi public private amalgamation of bankers and stockbrokers and hedge funds that kind of run a lot of really important stuff in this country that nobody ever really knows about? What is it that you have a problem with? And it kind of comes back to, you know, what are you? I think Chuck and I, if we wanted to play local, like Chuck and I sitting on a city council with our slightly different views on a number of different things, could be a very productive partnership despite those differences, because we'd be focused on playing the game of the local government.
I totally agree.
But
you and I in Washington, D.C. would wind up probably not talking to each other because we'd be ostracized.
I've had fantasies, Chuck, about this. When you and I are elected as, like, let's say we were Minnesota's two senators.
Right.
You know, let's say you're a Republican, let's say I'm a Democrat, and we're in the United States Senate together, and we're going to do it different. We're going to do Mr. Smith this bad boy. You know, we're going to go there and totally change things, you know. And I think what would happen is, we'd go to our caucus meetings and listen to the rah-rahs and listen to the discussions about which committees will be assigned to and how much support we'll receive for our reelection bids, you know, which are coming up all too soon, you know, and then we'd come and have coffee together and say, like, well, can we both support this bill that we think is really great? What kind of support can we get in our caucus? And we'd come to our little coffee meeting and we'd say, I can't get any support for this bill, you know.
Not only that, they want to primary me.
Yeah, now we're both getting primaried. Right. So, you know, and that's a really frustrating thing to think about.
Right. There's still time for you to call in, 800-662-5799. I'm sort of curious where, you know, we talk about we should be paying more attention to our local government or local politics. How can you get people interested in that when the national discussion? I know a few people who are now on the city council in Grand Rapids. Chuck, you're on the planning commission.
Yeah, I'm shaking my head because I respect what you just said. But I think that, like, I think it's the wrong question.
Okay.
So you just asked, like, how do we get people interested in city government? How do we get people involved? Well, the reality is, and I say this as someone who works with city governments all the time, has for decades, am on the planning commission, the city government has largely been reduced to like glorified dog catchers. Here's like the three things we'll allow you to do, and even those we're going to micromanage, so you really can't do all that much. Go solve major complex problems. And the reality is like we're reduced to applying for grants, looking for developers we can subsidize, and then trying to use the cash flow from those two things to fix all the other problems that we have in the system. And that's just not like a healthy way to run a place. How do we get people involved in local government is actually make local government responsible for things again. That's going to mean incompetent people will make incompetent decisions at the local level that affect you. Do you know what? Then competent people will step forward and fill that void.
Okay,
or those places will struggle.
So question what's going on, and that will eventually lead to people wanting to be involved more?
I actually am advocating for, and I've done this like over and over again here, a localization of authority and responsibility. So a lot of times you hear Republicans say, well, we want local control. And most times they really don't. I want local control, but I also want local responsibility. So in other words, I'm willing to like put the olive branch to my progressive friend and say, I want local control, but that doesn't mean just ignoring the problems. I want local control along with local responsibility.
Local like, capacity to solve problems.
That's what was my analogy with the kid learning to tie their shoe. Let's give people the capacity to do things. And right now we've stripped that from local government.